Good morning. We're much to my surprise, we're on the air. 97.1 FM Talk. This is the Ion Health Show. You got me, Dr. Steve Harvey, and we have our special co-host, Dr. Jessica Whalen. Say hi, Dr. Whalen.
Hello.
Hello. Glad to have you on the show. We're going to have an awesome show today. Hey, and before I tell you more about the show, we got Ted on the board. Say hi, Ted.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. All right. Yeah, so Ted's on the board there. So that board there has like about 100 buttons, and Ted only has two hands, so this is, what wizardry is this? I don't know.
They all do the same thing.
They all do the same thing. Yeah, I kind of wondered, because there's so many buttons and dials. I kind of wonder if it's like one of those Fisher Price things where most of them don't actually do anything, you know?
Sort of, yeah. Like, sort of? You know, each little row does the same thing, so it's not a big
deal. Oh, okay. So most of those buttons are just there to make you look important.
Exactly.
All right, cool. Okay, that's pretty cool. And Dr. Jones is not here with us today, but he'll be back. He's out of town today, so he's probably listening to the show saying, Steve, don't mess this up, please. And I'll try not to disappoint Mike there. So anyway, we are going to talk about, Jessica, we're going to talk about the topic that is on everybody's mind recently, and tell everybody what that topic is.
The coronavirus.
The coronavirus. Yes, yes. Hey, just a little bit of trivia that we brought up when we were off the air is, do you know how they named it the coronavirus, or why it's called the coronavirus?
Well, I know now that it is definitely not related to the beer.
It's not related. Exactly. It's not related to the beer. There's the coronavirus, and with a little Lyme virus, you need a little Lyme virus to go with the coronavirus. But the so the coronavirus, corona comes from, I don't know, Latin, Greek, I don't know, but it's the word for crown, you know, like coronation. Comes from the word for crown, because under you know, high power microscopy, if you have a high powered microscope, you can see the virus. The virus is like a sphere or like a circle with a bunch of studs all around it. So it kind of looks like a crown under a microscope. So that's why they call it coronavirus. But anyway, so the coronavirus, people might not know this, but the coronavirus is really a big category of viruses that's been around for, well, for tens of thousands of years, but it's been around for a long, long time. But there's a certain strain of the coronavirus that people are worried about now. And they call that the novel coronavirus, or sometimes they call it the 2019 novel coronavirus, or sometimes just the Wuhan coronavirus, because it came from Wuhan, or originated in the Wuhan area, which is a big city in China, about 11 million people there. And so with the virus, people are getting sick. It's a respiratory illness. Some people infected are really hardly sick at all, or just a little sick. Occasionally, people get very sick, and in some rare cases, it's been fatal. So it's something people are worried about.
Yeah, I think they've almost overdone it a little bit. Like, they have to have some kind of virus or illness that they have to bring up in the news every year. And this one, I think, is hitting China a little bit more than ourselves. I think the last I heard, U.S. has only had 7 cases and no deaths.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So in the U.S., yeah. And I only know this part because I looked it up last night. But yeah, so 7 cases. 6 out of those 7 are people who came back from China, who were visiting China and came back. And one of those 7 was like the spouse of one of those first 6.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been 1 case of person-to-person transmission in the U.S.
Use your hands. Cover your mouth when you cough.
Yes, wash your hands. Yeah, but so far, in the U.S., so far there have been 0 deaths.
Yeah.
So far. Of course, the problem could get bigger, but I don't know.
I think as long as everyone is aware when they're around, especially during any cold season, because we have other viruses that are going around now, it's not just the scare of the coronavirus.
Right.
We were talking about the flu or influenza off the air, yeah. everyone should take standard precautions just to make sure to wash your hands after you've coughed on them. Or if you're going into large crowds, just make sure to be aware if you are immunocompromised or if you have a weak immune system, consider wearing a mask. But they do say don't completely rely on a mask because many times they don't fit properly and they're not covering your mouth and your nose. So if you are immunocompromised, just be aware during flu season and during any kind of cold season to carry around some wipes and just take your standard precautions.
Yeah, and wash your hands and encourage those around you to wash their hands
and not
also.
Cough on you.
And not cough on you, right. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, so the coronavirus is something worth keeping your eye on, but I think there is a lot of hysteria like there. You know, people are like, oh my gosh, you know, are we gonna die? Yeah, we're all gonna die. And the answer is yes, we are all gonna die, but not from coronavirus. just to be clear. It's not gonna be from that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Higher chance of alcohol poisoning, probably.
or all sorts of different things. Yeah. But in China, there are more than 12,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus and of this particular coronavirus. And as of yesterday, when I checked, 213 deaths. So it is a big thing there. And there are currently 60 million people in some sort of lockdown in China who can't travel. And a lot of this happened right around Chinese New Year, which is like Christmas for them, you know? So that's
Big celebrations and big crowds, that's when things are going to be more likely to be communicable or spread from person to person.
Yeah. And I think it ruined a lot of travel plans, you know, people who wanted to see their relatives in another part of China or whatever, they couldn't do it. So they're kind of trapped. So that's sad. Yeah. But so the number of cases of this coronavirus outside of China is really small. You know, there's the 7 in the U.S. and a few dozen in various other parts of the world.
Yes.
Currently. So it's not that big of a problem outside of China currently. But they're still keeping an eye on it.
And it looks like some of the countries around the world, as I was just scanning, some of them are trying to slow flights out of China or impose different screening for people that are coming out of flights just to make sure that it's not spreading.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if this has been imposed, but I was listening to the station this morning and they were talking about if anybody had a confirmed case when getting off the plane, they were talking about trying to put them in a 14-day quarantine.
Oh, wow.
Even in the U.S. Yeah. I don't think that's become a thing, but people were kind of discussing it.
Yes. Huh. And I think before we go out on break, I think one very interesting sciencey thing that, sciencey is a word now. So one very interesting sciencey thing is that they've looked at the genetics of the people who tested positive for the new coronavirus. And the genes of all the different ones were very similar to each other in a way that pretty much shows that it was caught early. Because once a virus is out in the wild for a while, the genetic code tends to drift around and change, but it was fairly uniform. So for this coronavirus, genetically, they were able to show that that it's fairly new in its jump over to humans. And also that China jumped on it pretty quickly. So unlike the SARS outbreak years and years ago, which is also a coronavirus, unlike that one, for this one, the experts are saying that really China has done a pretty good job so far. And they've sort of jumped on it and quarantined and monitored and cooperated with health agencies from around the world. So we think that people in high places are pretty much doing the right thing for now.
And with viruses, it is interesting because they can mutate fairly quickly, mostly because I think for those of you that aren't science-y out there, viruses actually aren't alive. They're actually pieces of genetic code and pieces of material. And so it is easier. Their sole existence is for replication. If you're a Star Trek nerd, it's similar to the Borg.
But the Borg were alive.
Yes, the Borg were alive, so but their different. Purpose yes. was replicating.
Right. Yes. The coronavirus will assimilate you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but yeah.
And it actually does. Sometimes viruses will assimilate pieces of our own DNA or change our own DNA, which is where some of the research was actually looking at using viruses for a while to go in and target specific cells for destruction and things like cancer. So virus studies in particular is actually very interesting if anybody is a nerd like me and wants to go read on line all the different studies that have been looking at viruses as actual agents to treat illness.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when viruses are pretty cool when they're not giving you a cold or something like that. So, So anyway, we're coming up on break time here. So, we're going to go out on break in just a little bit. When we come back, a little more about Wuhan coronavirus, about one cure that's not a cure. And the germ that you should actually be worrying about is not coronavirus. All right, we're back.
Hello.
Hello. 97.1 FM, Ion Health Show. We got me, Dr. Steve Harvey. We got over there, Dr. Jessica Whalen. And we got over there, Ted on the board. So we are talking about the coronavirus. It's on everybody's mind and
On the news every other second.
Right, on the news every other second. We're all going to die. Yeah. So, yeah, it's on the news every other second. But, yeah, all joking aside, it is a thing, and it is something that's good that we're keeping our eye on. I think, you know, so just going over the real basic statistics again. So more than 10,000 confirmed cases in China. Relatively maybe a couple hundred confirmed cases in the rest of the world, including 7 in the U.S.
Mighty seven.
No deaths. Yeah, no deaths in the U.S. Also, no deaths outside of China. I mean, other than China, there have been no deaths from coronavirus. But 213 deaths as of yesterday from coronavirus. A lot of variation in how sick it makes people. They think there are some people infected with this coronavirus that have no symptoms or just feel a little bit sick, and then for other people they can be very sick, up to and including death.
But how does that compare? So when we're talking 200 deaths in China, and we look at something like the flu,
right?
How is that in comparison what we're looking at with the United States?
Oh, you know, I'm glad you asked. I just happened to look that up, and so in the flu season, in this year, in the flu season, 19 million people got the flu.
So quite a bit more.
Quite a bit more. So 19 million compared to 7 is more.
Anybody want to do the math?
I can. Yeah, it's hard to do the math, but that's more. And 180,000 hospitalizations due to the flu in the U.S.
That's quite an expense then to the United States.
Yeah, talking only about the flu. And for the flu, so far this flu, not this calendar year, but this flu season, more than 10,000 deaths.
So that is bigger than our zero.
Bigger than 10,000 zero. 10,000 bigger. I did the math on that one. It's 10,000 bigger than the zero. Yeah, it is.
And China's only had 203 with as many people that they actually have.
Yeah, they've got a lot of people there.
So we're looking at how the flu is actually potentially more devastating in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
But we've moved on to discussing the coronavirus. I think it's just important for everyone to know that it's, you know, that standard precautions for all viruses.
Yes.
And that brings up for patients and people that may be struggling or immunocompromised, remembering about flu vaccinations and things. And I know it comes up frequently, at least in my practice, should I get it? Should I not get it? And I think a lot of people forget that the development of vaccinations, especially for rapidly mutating viruses, which would include things like influenza, it's actually hard to create. And that is why a lot of times we'll hear that the flu vaccination was, quote, not as effective one year to the next. And because they have to kind of, based on science, figure out where the virus is going to go, how it's going to mutate when they create the vaccination. And so, yes, it is harder to make sure that it's always going to be 100% effective. But the CDC recommends it highly because it can at least, even if you don't get the full coverage, it still helps the immune system to kind of recognize the foreign invaders when they come in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It decreases chances of getting the flu. And if you do get the flu, I mean, you might still get the flu, but it decreases chances a lot. And if you do get the flu, you'll be less sick.
Yes.
And you're less likely to transmit the flu to people around you also.
Which is the biggest thing. And that's why in hospitals, because I know I used to work in supervision, and even a lot of the healthcare staff was unaware that a big reason that healthcare staff is required to get a vaccination is really not so much for them as it is for protecting their immunocompromised patients and making sure that they're not getting ill.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to turn yourself into a little petri dish going around and infecting all the people around you.
Exactly. It's one of my favorite words, become a fomite.
Right. Yeah. 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 So I think the CDC recommends, if you can, to try to get the flu vaccine early in the flu season.
Yes.
It's never too late. If it's late in the flu season, go ahead and do it if you haven't already. But they reckon, you know, the flu vaccine is not perfect, but it's pretty good. And the flu is a big deal.
Yes. Much bigger than the coronavirus.
Yes. Yeah. which kind of makes me wonder. I guess the coronavirus could become a bigger problem. But other than that, I wonder why coronavirus gets so much attention and the flu is... people practically forget about it, even though
it's there.
It's the air. I don't know if it's just, you know, ooh, it's from China. It's mysterious or...
I think that's part of it. Yeah. I studied journalism and I made it through two classes. Class one was ethics. Class two was learning how to write and break every rule of ethics to sell your story.
Oh,
And so sometimes, and even though it is kind of, I will call it salesy, or trying to get this story out there about coronavirus, I think it does yield or bring about more discussion about standard precautions and illness in general. So I can't fault it for being an exciting and new, interesting story that everyone's bringing up. But out of it, just remember that all viruses are kind of important to consider when we're walking about or in big crowds or traveling somewhere. Yeah. We just want to use basic common sense in order to keep ourselves healthy and everyone around us.
Yeah. It's all the, you got to think about all the, it's not just coronavirus. All viruses matter.
Yes.
All viruses matter. All right. Well, where do we go from there? Right. Yeah. But so something else. How? Okay.
I'm sorry. I snorted and it threw everything off.
Right. Yeah. So, but something else to think about is, in addition to the flu, is there is a there's a fake cure for coronavirus going around on the internet, and this is, and you weren't here for that one, Jessica, but this was just 1 or 2 weeks ago when Dr. Mike Jones and I were talking about it. So there is a bleach solution.
Oh, no.
And they don't call it bleach on the bottle, but it's Miracle Mineral Supplement.
Oh, really?
And there's other forms of the same thing where you buy it on the internet, and when you mix it with something acidic, it turns into a bleach, and it's not the same as, it's not exactly the same as the bleach you use for laundry, but it is a bleaching agent. There's online things saying that you're supposed to drink this and that it can, you know, cure the flu, can cure HIV, can cure autism, cure cancer,
really?
all kinds of wacky.
Apparently I need to drink some of that.
Right. I would not recommend it. Yeah, as you can imagine, surprise, it's fake.
Yes.
And there is zero evidence that this works for anybody. And there's abundant evidence that drinking bleach is a bad thing. That might shock and amaze you, but...
I'm pretty sure we learned that with Tide Pods.
Yes, right. It's as dumb as the Tide Pod thing, and yet people are doing it. And I think the way it works is websites out there with fake endorsements, encouraging people to buy it. And then on the other hand, there's people selling it on the internet who pretend that they're not the same person as the websites pushing it.
Yes.
So it's dangerous. I mean, people have gotten very sick. They've been hospitalized. It eats up your insides.
We probably have more deaths to that than the coronavirus itself.
Right. Yeah, it's certainly not less. It's certainly not less than zero deaths. So I can tell you that. So anyway, I think I never thought I would. I had mentioned this before, but I never thought I would be on the radio saying, you know, drinking bleach is bad.
Well, you know, after working in psychiatry and mental health, I think there are some interesting things I've had to tell patients.
That's true. Yes. Yes. You know, so I think somebody's out there listening to this who really needs to hear this.
Please don't
drink bleach or don't drink bleach.
Yes.
Don't drink bleaching agents. It's bad. So, so that's not a cure for coronavirus, but we're coming up on a break pretty soon. Not quite yet. When we come back, we have a very interesting topic. I think this will be a great topic. You might have seen in the mainstream media that Utah of all places, has placed a ban on LGBT conversion therapy. It's the most conservative state to do so. They have a Republican governor, a Republican legislature, and they banned conversion therapy. So what up with that? We'll be back. Point One FM Talk, KFDK. This is the Eye on Health show. We got me, Dr. Steve Harvey. We got Dr. Jessica Whalen. And we have Ted on the control board. And so we got a cool topic now. We got... So this is from about, I think this happened 1 or 2 weeks ago, where Utah became the 19th state to ban conversion therapy for minors. And for those of you who don't know, it goes by other names, but the gist of conversion therapy is to basically take people who are gay and try to un-gay them.
Yes, and they usually do this through methods of what they consider shaming.
Yeah.
I have a lot of patients, LGBTQ population in my practice, and I've actually had some that have experienced conversion therapy.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And we have to work a lot through the PTSD and the emotional trauma.
Yeah.
It's very interesting if anybody has ever watched those kind of shows on the television, like Maury Show and things like that, where people have kind of self-hate for their own self. It somewhat can manifest itself looking like that after therapy.
Yeah.
They'll still be who they are, but there's then just this self-loathing that comes, and it doesn't necessarily change anything, but create a level of PTSD that then is an ongoing life treatment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So, and that's, and I think for this particular one, because it's a surprise that Utah took this particular step, because, I mean, you know, Utah, right?
Right. Well, being so conservative, but I think people really need to look at the bigger picture and the cost associated. If you have a therapy that's going to fail patients and also make them sicker,
right?
Like I see in my practice now, having to manage chronic long-term PTSD.
Yeah.
We've now actually created a strong illness in someone that may never resolve itself.
They might hate themselves. They're still gay and now they hate themselves for it, which is the direct result of the conversion therapy. Yeah.
It didn't really convert anything except for into PTSD.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, for the, in this particular case, the Republican governor, Gary Herbert, through a spokesperson, he said he decided to support this conversion therapy ban because he thought that science should prevail over politics.
Yay.
Science over politics. So that's
concept.
A refreshing refreshing perspective. So let's ask Ted here. Hey, Ted.
What's up?
Okay. So if you had to choose science or politics, which is better?
That's tough. I
It's not tough. It's not tough.
I'm just kidding.
It's not at all tough.
It's not a trick question.
We are a bunch of science nerds in the
which is smarter,
right?
Science or politics?
I'm going to go with science on this one.
I think science, yes. Yeah, it's almost like the flu Wuhan comparison in magnitude. There.
Not that I don't think history is hard to learn to become a politician and comparative politics.
Yes, but
science is by far were my harder courses.
Right. Yeah. And I think science is fundamentally honest.
Yes.
And politics is not so much.
Right.
Usually.
I think it's the politics that makes the science come out. If there's any false science, a lot of times it's skewed by other factors.
Politics or industry or things like that. Yeah. So, and I think, you know, pretty much everybody who counts for anything has condemned conversion therapy, especially for minors. You know, the American Medical Association says it's bad and it doesn't work. American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, basically everybody. And I think the two parts of that, you know, one is that it's been shown to directly harm people who undergo the therapy.
Yes.
And it's basically hurting children.
Exactly. I mean, it goes back to, for those of you who have had to take as many psychology classes as I have with Eric Erickson, and his different stages, continually incorporating shame into children basically causes dysfunction at multiple stages in their development.
Yeah.
And so we really, by doing this type of therapy, created dysfunction and created different behavioral and psychological stages not to be met appropriately.
Yeah. And really just beyond the theoretical stuff, just empirically, you know, just by actual observation, and it sounds like you've seen this in your own practice too.
Yes.
But in larger populations, you can show that if someone who is gay or transgender, if they had conversion therapy as a kid, you know, first of all, they're still gay, but second of all, they have something like a doubling of a rate of suicide attempts and a much higher rate of depression. So we know that the treatment or the so-called treatment is directly harming people.
Right.
A large study of transgender people that came out in late 2019 in the American Journal of Psychiatry similarly showed that people who were exposed to conversion therapy were much worse off. And if they were exposed to conversion therapy at an early age, like before age 10, that they were even more worse off. That did a more deep-seated damage to people. And then, you know, at the same time, there's no evidence that it actually changes someone away from being gay. There are a lot of people who claim that they, you know, had prayed the gay away or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, they say they prayed the gay away, and next thing you know, they were caught.
Right. And I would say most people understand that work in the field. We all recognize that gender and sexual orientation all lie on a spectrum. So certain individuals that may say that may not be as far to one side of the spectrum as, say, another individual.
Right. Yeah. Somebody can be...
Bisexual, asexual, pansexual.
Right,
I think I've had.
Yeah, and I've lost track of what all those words mean. There's too many words, but yeah. But that's a subject of some interest. So I don't know. Do you think other states might follow the lead of Utah, or
I'm really hoping that they follow the lead, just because, you know, we've proven that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
We've proven that it causes harm, and especially given that this is starting in children.
Yeah.
Everybody should agree that our children are important to offer the best type of therapies to help them be productive and not lead to the suicide epidemic that we actually do seem to be seeing.
Yeah.
And for our LGBTQ population, it is already a higher rate. of suicidality. Yeah. So adding inappropriate therapies on top of that, we're kind of stating that that's going to be something that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I think before this ban, Utah had a higher than normal suicide rate. I think sometimes the conservative states are more likely to have people around them or families that are not accepting of who they are, which you see
the trauma. I see it in my practice every day. You know, people want to be close to their family.
Yeah.
And when, you know, a family decides to, based on their belief system, turn away from a family member, it creates abandonment, feelings of isolation and being alone, which again leads right back to PTSD.
Right. Yeah. Which is a lousy way to treat a kid.
Right.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of sad that sort of thing's still going on. But I do think the younger generation, you know, you talk to people in their, you know, in their teenagers or in their 20s, and they don't really care if someone's gay or trans. So I think that sort of thinking is going to continue to be on the decline.
Yes, yeah. I do find that peers today tend to be pretty supportive in that way. That is a protective factor for many of my patients, that if they have difficulties at home, the peer support that they can get from being accepted at least by their own age group tends to at least help offset some of the trauma that comes from being unaccepted at home.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I think as time goes on, hopefully the situation will be better for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It most definitely will save us as a whole from the financial perspective, as we know that chronic mental illness is one of the most expensive and debilitating of all the illnesses. It's
right
up there along with migraines and Alzheimer's disease. Those are some of the most expensive to society. Are those three. And then followed by our top things like cardiovascular disease and diabetes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, so if we can avoid damaging people when they're young, then when they're older, they won't need to consume as many mental health services.
Very much.
And they can more likely to have a job and pay taxes as opposed to unable to hold a job and pay taxes. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
I sometimes joke with my patients that I'd like to see these things fixed. And they're like, but then you won't have a job. And I say, well, I'd rather not have a job and have healthy people around me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, working in psychiatry, we'll always have a job. I know. No shortage there.
Yes.
But yeah. 0.1 FM Talk, KFDK. This is the Ion Health Show. We got me, Dr. Steve Harvey. We got Dr. Jessica Whalen. And we have Ted on the control board. And so we got a cool topic now. We got so this is from about, I think this happened 1 or 2 weeks ago, where Utah became the 19th state to ban conversion therapy for minors. And for those of you who don't know, it goes by other names, but the gist of conversion therapy is basically take people who are gay and try to un-gay them.
Yes, and they usually do this through methods of what they consider shaming.
Yeah.
I have a lot of patients, LGBTQ population in my practice, and I've actually had some that have experienced conversion therapy.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And we have to work a lot through the PTSD and the emotional trauma.
Yeah.
It's very interesting if anybody has ever watched those kind of shows on the television, like Maury Show and things like that, where people have kind of self-hate for their own self. It somewhat can manifest itself looking like that after therapy.
Yeah.
They'll still be the who they are, but there's then just this self-loathing that comes, and it doesn't necessarily change anything but create a level of PTSD that then is an ongoing life treatment.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, and that's and I think for this particular one, because it's a, you know, it's a surprise that Utah took this particular step, because I mean, you know, Utah, right?
Right. Well, being so conservative. But yeah. I think people really need to look at the bigger picture and the cost associated. If you have a therapy that's going to fail patients and also make them sicker.
Right.
Like I see in my practice now having to manage chronic long-term PTSD.
Yeah.
We've now actually created a strong illness in someone that may never resolve itself.
They might. Yeah. They might hate themselves. They're still gay and now they hate themselves for it, which is the direct result of the conversion therapy. Yeah.
So it didn't really convert anything except for into PTSD.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, for the, in this particular case, the Republican governor, Gary Herbert, through a spokesperson, he said he decided to support this conversion therapy ban because he thought that science should prevail over politics.
Yay.
Science over politics. So I think that's
concept.
A refreshing perspective. So let's ask Ted here. Hey, Ted.
What's up?
Okay. So if you had to choose science or politics, which is better?
That's tough.
It's not tough. It's not tough.
I'm just
kidding. It's not at all tough.
It's not a trick question.
We are a bunch of science nerds in the studio right now.
Which is smarter, science or politics?
I'm going to go with science on this one. I mean,
I think science, yes. Yeah, it's almost like the flu Wuhan comparison in magnitude. There.
Not that I don't think history is hard to learn to become a politician and comparative politics.
Yes.
But.
Yes, but.
Sciences by far were my harder courses.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think science is fundamentally honest.
Yes.
And politics is not so much.
Right.
Usually.
I think it's the politics that makes the science come out. If there's any false science, a lot of times it's skewed by other factors.
Politics or industry or things like that. Yeah, yeah. So, and I think... pretty much everybody who counts for anything has condemned conversion therapy, especially for minors. You know, the American Medical Association says it's bad and it doesn't work. American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, basically everybody. And I think the two parts of that, one is that it's been shown to directly harm people who undergo the therapy.
Yes.
And it's basically hurting children.
Exactly. I mean, it goes back to, for those of you who have had to take as many psychology classes as I have with Eric Erickson, and his different stages, continually incorporating shame into children basically causes dysfunction at multiple stages in their development.
Yeah.
And so we really, by doing this type of therapy, created dysfunction and created different behavioral and psychological stages not to be met appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. And really just beyond the theoretical stuff, just empirically, just by actual observation, and it sounds like you've seen this in your own practice too.
Yes.
But in larger populations, you can show that if someone who is gay or transgender, if they had conversion therapy as a kid, first of all, they're still gay, but second of all, they have something like a doubling of a rate of suicide attempts and a much higher rate of depression. So we know that the treatment or the so-called treatment is directly harming people.
Right.
A large study of transgender people that came out in late 2019 in the American Journal of Psychiatry similarly showed that people who were exposed to conversion therapy were much worse off. And if they were exposed to conversion therapy at an early age, like before age 10, that they were even more worse off. That it did a more deep-seated damage to people. And then, at the same time, there's no evidence that it actually changes someone away from being gay. There are a lot of people who claim that they, had prayed the gay away or whatever.
Right.
But, they say they prayed the gay away, and next thing they were caught
Right. And I would say most people understand that work in the field. We all recognize that gender and sexual orientation all lie on a spectrum. So certain individuals that may say that may not be as far to one side of the spectrum as, say, another individual.
Right. Yeah. Somebody can be
bisexual, asexual, pansexual.
Right.
I think I've had.
Yeah. And I've lost track of what all those words mean. There's too many words, but yeah. So, but that's a subject of some interest. So I don't know. Do you think other states might follow the lead of Utah, or
I'm really hoping other states, that they follow the lead, just because, you know, we've proven that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
We've proven that it causes harm.
Mm-hmm.
And especially given that this is starting in children, everybody should agree that our children are important to offer the best type of therapies to help them be productive and not lead to the suicide epidemic that we actually do seem to be seeing.
Yeah.
And for our LGBTQ population, it is already a higher rate of suicidality.
Yeah.
So adding inappropriate therapies on top of that, we're kind of stating that that's going to be something that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. And I think before this ban, Utah had a higher than normal suicide rate. I think, I think sometimes the conservative states are more likely to have people around them or families that are not accepting of who they are, which you see
the trauma. I see it in my practice every day. You know, people want to be close to their family.
Yeah.
And when, you know, a family decides to, based on their belief system, turn away from a family member, it creates abandonment, feelings of isolation and being alone, which again leads right back to PTSD.
Right. Yeah. Which is a lousy way to treat a kid.
Right.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of sad that sort of thing's still going on, but I do think the younger generation, you know, you talk to people in their, you know, in their teenagers or in their 20s, and they don't really care if someone's gay or trans. So I think that sort of thinking is going to continue to be on the decline.
Yes, yeah. I do find that peers today tend to be pretty supportive in that way. That is a protective factor for many of my patients, that if they have difficulties at home, the peer support that they can get from being accepted at least by their own age group tends to at least help offset some of the trauma that comes from being unaccepted at home.
Yeah. So I think as time goes on, hopefully the situation will be better for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It most definitely will save us as a whole from the financial perspective, as we know that chronic mental illness is one of the most expensive and debilitating of all the illnesses. It's
right
up there along with migraines and Alzheimer's disease. Those are some of the most expensive to society, are those three. And then followed by our top things like cardiovascular disease and diabetes.
Yeah. And then, you know, so if we can avoid damaging people when they're young, then when they're older, they won't need to consume as many mental health services. And they can more likely to have a job and pay taxes as opposed to unable to hold a job and pay taxes. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
I sometimes joke with my patients that I'd like to see these things fixed. And then they're like, but then you won't have a job. And I say, well, I'd rather not have a job and have healthy people around me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, working in psychiatry, we'll always have a job. I know. No shortage there.
Yes.
But yeah. All right. Hey, we got more topics coming up. We're getting close to break time here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a study that has a unique approach to reducing the suicide rate. How can we do that?
All right, we're back.
97.1 FM Talk. This is the Ion Health Show. Dr. Steve Harvey, Dr. Jessica Whalen, and Ted running the board.
Hello.
Yeah. Here we are. So, hey, We talked off the air a little bit about what we're about this next topic. This is something else that's been in the mainstream media and it has caught some attention. And it looks like fairly good science as far as a way to reduce the suicide rate that might hold some controversy here.
Definitely.
Yeah. So in this study, they looked at suicides between 1990 and 2015, and they specifically looked at the suicide rates from one state compared to another, and they looked at what was the minimum wage in one state compared to another, and they also looked at how did the suicide rates change when the minimum wage changed, I think it's impossible to control for all the variables in something so complicated, but they did the best they could to control for those variables. And basically what they found is that a higher minimum wage reduces suicide.
And I don't think that's that shocking. Actually, probably have this conversation at least 4 times a day in my practice.
Really? Yeah.
This is actually something that I talk about frequently, about the suicide rate and mental illness in America, and how I personally believe that we're not breeding more mental illness. I do a lot of genetic testing. Yeah. We all have genetics that predispose us toward one type of mental illness or another. But it's really the stress that starts to turn those genetics toward, I call them, like kind of the negative trait.
Yeah,
and that might be, more suicidality, more anxiety, more depression, et cetera. And what I see the most in my practice is that patients who are, quote, I call it backed into a corner. They're struggling meeting their bills. They're working 16-hour days. They're not sleeping. They're having to go from job to job. They don't have time with their family. They don't have vacation time. Yeah. And they're afraid of working their job. The more people are backed into corners, we are biologically still mammals, and there's one of two ways that goes. It's either a lash out or a lash inward. And so I feel, we're seeing, the school shootings and things as people lash out, and we're seeing more suicides as people are not able to figure out what their next moves are. And I would say the number one issue I hear in my practice is people really worried about how they're going to pay their bills, how they're going to put food on the table, how they're going to pay their electric. That is probably the number one thing I hear. And I would definitely say it correlates with the depression scales that we do in my office. The higher the depression, the more financial dysfunction there is.
Yeah. Because I guess that kind of brings up the question of, does money buy happiness? But it's like, well,
not necessarily happiness, not necessarily, but less stress.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, certainly if someone is really, really struggling to make ends meet and they have a miserable life, then, that the lack of money is part of the problem. And if they're kind of trapped in that situation where they have to work so they can't go to school and they can't better themselves to get a better job and they have people to support and,
right. Yeah, I would say trapped. I've had periods of time in my life, even with a good career, where I've, been like, okay, where's this money going to come next? How am I going to pay this bill?
Right.
And I could only imagine amplifying that if it meant between choosing a medication for a family member, or choosing between eating that day, or choosing if I was going to put gas in my car to get to my job, or even being able to pay the rent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think poverty is definitely part of the mental illness epidemic. Yeah. And I guess some people would argue, and I'm not sure where I stand on this, but some people would say, well, if you increase the minimum wage, then there would be fewer jobs. There might be some truth to that. I think that's certainly what some people would say.
I think it depends on where you take the money from. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some higher end people paid in certain organizations that could probably take a little less in order to ensure that some people made a little more. But and I don't know if it would necessarily take from the jobs, because it would still have to get done. you still have to produce whatever it is that you're trying to bring about. So yeah, they would have to find a way to budget that appropriately within an organization if they increased their employee wages.
And I think there's some argument that if low-income people, if there's bazillion low-income people out there, if they made a little more money, that could be like fertilizer for the economy, and they would actually use that little more money to buy things and stimulate the economy.
I think that if people had, obviously, if people had expendable resources or money to stimulate the economy, of course they're going to buy things. That's kind of, isn't that the American way? But at the same time, if you have extra money, people do tend to try and at least purchase things on their own. But if you can't even pay for food, there's a lot less likely for that to be happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess, you know, sort of the whole issue is, you know, very much entangled in, you know, not just science, but also politics and economics, which is another kind of science, but
and math.
Yeah. regardless of what you otherwise think about minimum wage, they did show, you know, that a $1 increase in minimum wage caused a fairly substantial decrease in the suicide rate, which I would presume is because people at the bottom would be a little less desperate.
Yes.
Have a little less miserable of a life and be able to hang on and provide for their families.
Well, I always like to look at, I mean, and even in my studies and looking at other mammals, the only times that other mammals usually attack their young or anything like that is when they're under stress and duress. When there isn't enough food or the rest of the herd will be jeopardized, that's when people start acting out.
Right.
And that's when animals start acting out.
Yeah.
So we're really not that far removed.
Yeah.
Desperation drives a lot of these instances that we're seeing suicidality and also homicidality.
Yeah, yeah. We'd probably have less of that problem if we lived in a better world. So we'll get right on that. We'll just make the world better. Surely that won't be too hard to do. So yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting topic that we could have all day, all sorts of controversy. All sorts of controversy with that. But I think a couple other things to talk about before we wrap up here. One is that we love doing this show and we're going to keep doing it. And there's going to be some changes. There's going to be some exciting changes on the show. One change is we're changing the name of the show in March. So don't get confused. Right now, still today, we are the Ion Health Show, and in March we will be the Medical Beat. So you can check out the website, themedicalbeat.com. There's not much on the website right now, but go ahead and check it. And you can there will be stuff there.
Give us ideas.
Yeah, give us ideas. Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Whalen will be here a lot. And
thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And Dr. Jones will be here, and I'll be here, and either Ted or Chad will be there on the board. So we're gonna have a good show, and we're gonna have all kinds of new stuff.
New
features. Yeah, she'll be shiny and new. So anyway, that's it. It's a little before checkout time, but I guess we can. Yeah, Ted will play the music and fade us out here. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
And we stay really enjoyed healthy.
It. Yeah, stay healthy. Don't let people cough on you. And we'll see you next week. Ciao.
Bye.
All right, we're back. 97.1 FM Talk. This is the Ion Health Show. Dr. Steve Harvey, Dr. Jessica Whalen, and Ted running the board.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. Here we are. So, hey, we talked off the air a little bit about this next topic. This is something else that's been in the mainstream media and it has caught some attention, and it looks like fairly good science as far as a way to reduce the suicide rate that might hold some controversy here.
Definitely.
Yeah. So in this study, they looked at suicides between 1990 and 2015, and they specifically looked at the suicide rates from one state compared to another, and they looked at the minimum, what was the minimum wage in one state compared to another, and they also looked at how did the suicide rates change when the minimum wage changed. I think it's impossible to control for all the variables in something so complicated, but they did the best they could to control for those variables. And basically what they found is that a higher minimum wage reduces suicide.
And I don't think that's that shocking. Actually, I probably have this conversation at least 4 times a day in my practice.
Really? Yeah.
This is actually something that I talk about frequently, about the suicide rate and mental illness in America, and how I personally believe that we're not breeding more mental illness. I do a lot of genetic testing. Yeah. We all have genetics that predispose us toward one type of mental illness or another. But it's really the stress that starts to turn those genetics toward, I call them, like kind of the negative trait.
Yeah,
and that might be, more suicidality, more anxiety, more depression, et cetera. And what I see the most in my practice is that patients who are, quote, I call it backed into a corner. They're struggling meeting their bills. They're working 16-hour days. They're not sleeping. They're having to go from job to job. They don't have time with their family. They don't have vacation time. Yeah. And they're afraid of work. Their job, the more people are backed into corners, we are biologically still mammals. And there's one of two ways that goes. It's either a lash out or a lash inward. And so I feel, we're seeing, the school shootings and things as people lash out, and we're seeing more suicides as people are not able to figure out what their next moves are. And I would say the number one issue I hear in my practice is people really worried about how they're going to pay their bills, how they're going to put food on the table, how they're going to pay their electric. That is probably the number one thing I hear. And I would definitely say it correlates with the depression scales that we do in my office. The higher the depression, the more financial dysfunction there is.
Yeah. Because I guess that kind of brings up the question of, does money buy happiness? But it's like, well,
not necessarily happiness, but less stress.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, certainly if someone is really, really struggling to make ends meet and they have a miserable life, then, that the lack of money is part of the problem. And if they're kind of trapped in that situation where they have to work so they can't go to school and they can't better themselves to get a better job and they have people to support and,
right. Yeah, I would say trapped. I've had periods of time in my life, even with a good career, where I've, been like, okay, where's this money going to come next? How am I going to pay this bill?
Right.
And I could only imagine amplifying that if it meant between choosing a medication for a family member, or choosing between eating that day, or choosing if I was going to put gas in my car to get to my job, or even being able to pay the rent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think poverty is definitely part of the mental illness epidemic. Yeah. And I guess some people would argue, and I'm not sure where I stand on this, but some people would say, well, if you increase the minimum wage, then there would be fewer jobs. There might be some truth to that. I think that's certainly what some people would say.
I think it depends on where you take the money from. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some higher end people paid in certain organizations that could probably take a little less in order to ensure that some people made a little more. But and I don't know if it would necessarily take from the jobs, because it would still have to get done. You still have to produce whatever it is that you're trying to bring about. So they would have to find a way to budget that appropriately within an organization if they increased their employee wages.
And I think there's some argument that if low income people, if there's bazillion low income people out there, if they made a little more money, that could be like fertilizer for the economy, and they would actually use that little more money to buy things and stimulate the economy.
I think that if people had expendable resources or money to stimulate the economy, of course they're going to buy things. That's kind of, isn't that the American way? But at the same time, if you have extra money, people do tend to try and at least purchase things on their own. But if you can't even pay for food, there's a lot less likely for that to be happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess, you know, sort of the whole issue is, you know, very much entangled in, you know, not just science, but also politics and economics, which is another kind of science,
mm-hmm.
but
and math,
yeah. But regardless of what you otherwise think about minimum wage, they did show, you know, that a $1 increase in minimum wage caused a fairly substantial decrease in the suicide rate, which I would presume is because people at the bottom would be a little less desperate.
Yes.
Have a little less miserable of a life,
mm-hmm.
and be able to hang on and provide for their families.
Well, I always like to look at, I mean, and even in my studies and looking at other mammals, the only times that other mammals usually attack their young or anything like that is when they're under stress and duress. When there isn't enough food or the rest of the herd will be jeopardized, that's when people start acting out.
Right,
and that's when animals start acting out.
Yeah,
so we're really not that far removed.
Yeah.
Desperation drives a lot of these instances that we're seeing, suicidality and also homicidality.
Yeah, yeah. We'd probably have less of that problem if we lived in a better world. So we'll get right on that. We'll just make the world better. Surely that won't be too hard to do. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting topic that we could have all day, all sorts of controversy, mm-hmm. all sorts of controversy with that. But I think a couple other things to talk about before we wrap up here. One is that we love doing this show and we're going to keep doing it. And there's going to be some changes. There's going to be some exciting changes on the show. One change is we're changing the name of the show in March. So don't get confused. Right now, still today, we are the Ion Health Show. And in March, we will be the Medical Beat. So you can check out the website, themedicalbeat.com. There's not much on the website right now, but go ahead and check it. And you can, there will be stuff there.
Give us ideas.
Yeah, give us ideas. Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Whalen will be here a lot. And,
thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And Dr. Jones will be here, and I'll be here, and either Ted or Chad will be there on the board. So we're gonna have a good show, and we're gonna have all kinds of new stuff.
All kinds of new
features. Yeah, she'll be shiny and new. So anyway, that's it. It's a little before checkout time, but I guess we can. Yeah, Ted will play the music and fade us out here. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
And we stay really enjoyed healthy.
It. Yeah, stay healthy. Don't let people cough on you. And we'll see you next week. Ciao.
Bye.